What's up, South Bay? Good to see all of you guys today. Man, it is great to have each and every one of you here. I want to welcome all of you, including all of our campuses and those of you who are joining us online today. We are in a series right now called Party Life because life is just a little more fun and enjoyable when you have fun. I know. Seriously, like think about it. When you have fun in life, you have a little bit more joy, and we really do believe that each of us want to have more joy and celebration in our lives. And I think that's one of the beauties of why we even come here to all of our campuses and we come worship together, because we believe that God wants there to be more joy and celebration and cause for celebration in each and every one of our lives. So as we wrap up this series in a couple weeks, so you're going to want to write this day down, put it in your calendar right now, all right? On Sunday, August the 20th, we're going to practice a little bit about what we preach right here, because we're going to be having a huge party at all three of our campuses following each of our services. So Sunday, August the 20th, after each service, don't miss the opportunity. Invite somebody to be here. We're going to have food, bounce houses, friends, and of course, fun, because we can have fun in church. Thank you very much. You know, I think for me, too, I think about this a lot. Maybe you think about this. Like, you don't have to teach a kid to have fun. Have you noticed this? You parents out there of all of our campuses, maybe you've got like a toddler age. I mean, sometimes they give you the attitude, but more often than not, they have a lot of fun because kids just like to have fun. They don't have the pressure and the weight of the world on them because parents are usually sheltering a lot of that for them. And I think about this a lot, especially when I look at my daughter, Avery. Now, Avery is my middle daughter. We've got three kids. She just turned four about a week ago. And this girl is a party in a box. All right, so to try and illustrate this a little bit, check out a couple of these pictures here of her. You can actually see this. She has more energy and excitement. This right here just kind of says, I'm ready to go, you know, like right here. We've got another one here. You can see the way that she plays. She always has creative ideas and loves to put her goggles on upside down, and just the biggest smiles that you'll see. And then recently she got a pet fish for her birthday, and she was just ecstatic about this. But this is the thing, if you see this little girl, she is always running, she's always jumping, she's always making some kind of noise that most of the time is unintelligible, like you don't know what she's saying, but she just is about fun. She loves to be tickled, she loves to laugh. I mean, there is a joy inside of her no matter what is going on that day or where she finds herself. And I think for a lot of us, the older that we get, that sense of fun and joy that we had when we were kids starts to slip. You know, we start to lose a little bit of that fun edge, because you know you're getting older when you start talking to your friends about your back pain. You're like, man, I just woke up stiff this morning, you know? You start asking like, hey, ma'am, what do you do for your 401k plan? How you work? Like, when you start having these kind of conversations, you know you're getting older. I mean, like, you're entering into adulting where if you're not careful, every day becomes a case of the Mondays, you know? And you go through life like this, and then life can throw you some of the bigger curveballs. You fail the test or maybe the class, or you get laid off, or you don't get that job. You got relationship issues, and on we go. And when we find ourselves in this point where we just feel like life is just kind of like, blah, or life is just hitting this difficult point, we're like, I don't know how I'm going to get through this. We can start to feel like we're dying inside almost, like we're trapped, like I can't get through this. Like I don't have reason for joy and celebration because of the circumstances and the pressures that I constantly feel that are on me. But isn't it amazing how at times for us, when we feel the pressure, when we feel like the joy is being zapped, when all of a sudden it's like there's something on the horizon that we have to look forward to, it's like the hope starts to come back. The excitement starts to creep back in. That I can make it till that point when this happens and I get a little bit of relief. I mean, what happens for us is a part of celebration and joy takes place in the anticipation of what's to come. And I think about this like this year. I mean, this is just a simple thing. You know, like my wife and I this year in January, we put all of our vacations on the calendar for the whole year. So what we did is about every 3 months, we put in something. It's a day off. It's a week off. It's time like that. And so you know what happens is every 3 months, every time you finish a vacation, you're like, I can see the next one, baby. We can make it. And the next one's in October when we celebrate our 10-year anniversary and we're going away with no kids. Anticipation brings excitement and joy. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're like looking forward to being away and you've got something to look forward to. Some of you, you've been busting it in school and now you're about to start your final year and you're like, I can do this. I can make it. I can see the end. You know, you're about to get married and you're thinking, oh man, we're about to get married. We're starting a brand new life together. We're about to have a kid. I saw one of our ushers at our North San Jose campus today just had a kid and he came here for coffee. So we told him we could take a nap in one of our offices too. But you know, like we have these things to look forward to. I mean, some of you, if you're honest, you've already built your Christmas playlist because we're 4 months out. And you're starting to get excited because Christmas is coming. But there's a whole part for us on anticipation of what's to come, that it brings excitement and joy and celebration into our lives. Because I think anticipation brings hope. Anticipation brings hope. And hope is the foundation for joy. It's because I have hope that I have joy now. See, our joy today stands on our hope for tomorrow. Because I have hope tomorrow, I have joy today, even in where I find myself in my life. And so the question becomes for us as we go through life is, how do I then find my hope for tomorrow? I mean, what is my hope for tomorrow? When sometimes it feels like I can't see past today. And now I recognize when we think about this at all of our campuses, that there are people gathered together. Some who are followers of Jesus and others who maybe it's your first time in church and you're checking things out and you don't even really know much about this at all. And I think for us in understanding, even if you're checking it out, to have an understanding of what God wants to do in your life, and even for us as followers of Jesus to be reminded of the truth that we should always have reason. We should always have reason to find joy and celebration in our life. Because of our hope. See, as a follower of Jesus, we not only find hope and joy in what God is doing now. I mean, I see the life change that's happening in so many people at our campuses, the life transformation that is taking place, the sins and the addictions and the things that are being broken, the marriages that are being restored, the relationships that people are growing in, all because of what God is doing right now in somebody's life. But also for a follower of Jesus, we should have a great hope of the future. Not just our future life in 20, 30, 40 years, but our future eternal life. Because as a follower of Jesus, we have a hope of heaven. We have a hope of spending eternity in a place called heaven with God, our Creator. A place that will be constant joy and celebration. The point where we hit the ultimate party life where God gives us joy throughout our lives. And so I think about this, like for us, oftentimes it's hard to think in light of eternity. You know, we oftentimes think about heaven when we go to a funeral. Because that's oftentimes what we think, because that's what's giving us hope that maybe we'll see this person again one day when we go to heaven. We think about maybe when our pet dies, but this only applies to dogs because it's all dogs go to heaven, not cats. So that's the movie, right? So we think about this though, like that we have this hope when somebody passes away that maybe one day we'll see them again. And that's when heaven comes to the forefront of our minds, but it's hard on a day-to-day basis to keep heaven in the forefront. Because I think what's hard is sometimes it's to take the intangible of heaven and keep it in the forefront of our minds in a very tangible world. You see, tomorrow you go back to work and you've got the boss breathing down your neck and you're not thinking about heaven, you're thinking about how do I escape Monday? You've got the bills to pay this week. You've got that relationship issue in your marriage that right now you're asking the question of how in the world do we make it through this? And it's so hard when we feel these constant pressures of today to think about what's happening in the eternal. To think about how the hope of heaven can fuel our joy today. And so as we look at this idea of anticipating what's to come, I think that there's three ways that we can see that if we can begin to shape our outlook a little bit, if we can begin to reorient our mindset around heaven and the hope that is there, there's three things that we can see that can hit our lives today. And to see these, we're going to look back at some writings from a guy named Paul. The Apostle Paul, is one of the great figures in the New Testament of the Bible. Paul would have his life radically transformed by Jesus to where he would go from hunting down and killing Christians to now he is the ultimate church starter. He's going around starting churches all over, and he would write letters to these churches instructing them in faith, instructing them about what the promises of God, what it means when you put your faith in Jesus, all the hope and the things that can come with that into our life. And he writes these letters, and in 2 Corinthians, it's the second letter that he's written to the church in a place called Corinth. And Paul writes this letter, and he sits down, and he kind of details out, writing about what God's been doing in him, about the ministry that they've had, about some of the heartaches that they have felt, about some of the persecutions or the pain, the things that have taken place, some of the sacrifices they've had to make. And he writes about all these, but then he gets down to these verses that I think really can shed light onto the outlook that we as a follower of Jesus should have. Now, for those of you who are still learning about what it means to follow Jesus, I hope that this helps you see a little bit more clear the hope that we can have as a result of our relationship with Jesus. And this takes place in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, and we're going to look at verses 16 through 18. Now remember, Paul has just been writing about all the things that have happened in their life, and he says, "Therefore, we do not lose heart, though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal." See, right here in these few verses, Paul gives us this outlook that we can use to view our circumstances, our hope, our difficulties, our day-to-day through this lens and looking through the light of eternity. See, I think when we look at Paul and we understand for us as a follower of Jesus that there with the hope of heaven for us gives us a greater perspective. That the hope of heaven should give us a greater perspective on the things that we go through in our lives each and every day. I mean, I think about this, like your perspective of the future will shape your perspective of today. I mean, your perspective of the future will form your joy today. See, you've heard the phrase, right? Are you a glass half full or glass half empty person? And the answer maybe kind of depends on what day of the week it is. But I think we all know the glass half full person, we like to be around. Because you know what? They're like the ones who are like, "Don't worry about it. We can do it. You got this. Let's go. Sure, we can have that project done. Yeah, we can get this together." You know, like they've got this energy, this optimism, this positive outlook. I mean, you're like, "I like you. We should hang out more." But the glass half empty person, they're like, "Nope, not got enough, not gonna happen, not enough time, not enough resources, not enough stuff, no, we can't do there, can't go there." And you're like, "Oh my gosh, please, don't you have something to do?" Because what happens is our perspective, the way that we see our future, will directly impact our joy in the way that we perceive what's happening today. I think about this when my wife and I first got married. It was about our first year of marriage. I injured my back, and I actually bulged a disc in my lower back. Now, if you've ever had a back injury like that, like a slipped disc, bulged disc, anything like that, like you enter into a club. Because anybody like with that kind of pain, you're like, "I know, man. I've taken that pill. I've been to them doctor's appointments. I've gotten the shots. I've done everything. Like, I get it. You know." You have more empathy for somebody else with it because you're like, "I know the pain that you have with that." And I remember how bad it was. Like it would be like the point where like trying to get up, like I had to push off of things to get up, and it would almost bring tears into my eyes because it would hurt so bad all the way up and down. And my wife, who we're just about a year into marriage, is looking at me thinking, "Really? I didn't think in sickness and in health and death to us part was this long." You know? Like, so she's looking at me like, and she's seeing me like, just go do this. And I remember there was times where you'd have this perspective of, I'm going to do this. We're going to keep pushing. God's going to bring healing. I have a little bit day. Maybe there's a little bit better. Oh no, that's just because I took a huge pill that killed all my pain. You know, like you have these days where you think the perspective is better. And what would happen is you begin to get some more hope in your body. You get some more hope in your brain. You're thinking, man, we can do this. And then you have the days where it's like, it's really bad. And you think, man, I can't do this. And I vividly remember this time. We were at some friend's house, and they had these couple little kids, and the kids are running around, and we're kind of out there, and I'm like doing this thing, you know, and it's just hurting like crazy. And I had this thought, because this is one of my low points. I had the thought, go, one day we're going to have kids, and I don't know if I'll ever be able to run with my kids. I mean, I don't know if you've ever had those times where you feel like that. And see, we go up and down, but the perspective that we have on our future will shape and impact the joy that we have today, because our joy today stands on our hope for tomorrow. And so for us as followers of Jesus, we have to constantly be asking the question, how am I reminding myself and shaping and changing my perspective? Because you see, our perspective will change oftentimes based on our circumstances, but our faith, our hope is not based on my current present circumstances. It's why Paul can say, therefore, we don't lose heart. No matter what we're going through, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. And for us as a follower of Jesus, for somebody who's following him, the way that we can be renewed is we got to constantly remind ourselves of the promises that God has said. The things where he said, I'll give you strength, the things that you can have hope for. We have to constantly be asking, how am I taking God's word, which is the very basis of our faith, to understand it? How am I constantly getting that into my life to reorient my thinking, to change my heart, to give me a greater perspective for today? And when we begin to put this perspective on heaven, on eternity, on the promises of God, it can begin to change and correct our perspective. And it's not a one-off thing that we do and then we're good to go. It's day by day that we constantly need to be renewed. I think about when Paul, his perspective, even when he would say, it's our light and momentary troubles. You know, Paul's life, like he writes this because his perspective, again, was so much greater because when he saw his life, he saw it in the light of eternity. He saw the hope of heaven. So when he looked at everything he went through, he saw it so much different. He calls them light and momentary troubles. And for us to look at this, it would be anything but light and momentary. In fact, when you read later in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, it would say about Paul, Paul would actually go down his list of things that have happened. That he'd been whipped 5 times just short of death. That he'd been beaten with rods 3 times, that he had been shipwrecked 3 times, that he'd spent 1 day and 1 night in open sea floating. He swam after 1 shipwreck to shore, and he gets bit by a snake after getting to shore. I mean, come on. Seriously? I just survive a shipwreck, and then I get bit by a snake. Then he's imprisoned for his faith. He's hunted down by people. He goes without sleep. He goes without food. He's constantly on the move. I mean, this is his life, and you know what? This is not because he went out and made a bunch of stupid decisions. This is not because he did a lot of unwise things. The reason that he's going through all these things is because his faith and his focus on eternity is driving him to say, I want to see more and more people also have the hope of heaven and eternity and the life change that can happen through Jesus. See, there's no sin that's driving this. This is his faith and his whatever it takes mentality to help somebody else experience heaven. And as a result, he goes to this, but he says, this is light and momentary. Because again, his hope for heaven gives him a different perspective to say, this isn't it. This isn't where it stops. And so for us, we have to constantly bring back to mind the perspective that we can have. Because we think at a higher level. We think within the light of eternity. And we ask the question, man, how is my hope of heaven driving my joy and my celebration in my life today, no matter where I find myself? But I think also that a hope for heaven gives us a greater purpose. I think one of the greatest robbers of our joy is when we feel like, I don't know what my purpose is. I lack a fulfillment. So often, you know, here in this area, people move from all over the country. We all come here. We get the dream job. We get the job, we're making more money, especially people when they come out of school, like you're making more money than maybe you've ever made in your life. You're thinking, wow, I got this. Then you go to one of our YP life groups and you find the spouse, because that's what happens there apparently, you know. You find the spouse and now you're like, man, I'm locking it down. And then, so just don't be weird if you go, okay? Let me just say that real quick. No Scary Larrys or something like that there. Anyways, so we find the spouse, you know, I got the kids, I got the car, we got the house, maybe, or the resort-style apartment in San Jose. You know, so we find all these different things, and we're like, feel like, well, I'm settling in, man. Like, this is it. And then we get running, and we're doing all this stuff, and then all of a sudden, it's like, is that it? Like, did I really sign up the next 40 years of my life to always have to answer email on vacation? Did I sign up to pay all these crazy bills? Like, what am I doing? And we can start to ask that question, like, man, there's got to be more than just making somebody else money. There's got to be more than just pushing some product. And I think for us, when we live in light of eternity, when we can follow Jesus and keep heaven on the forefront, the hope for heaven in our minds, that it will give us greater purpose and it will give us a greater fulfillment in what we do. Because what happens is when we keep that in light, we begin to shape our actions, our words, what we do, how we spend our time, where we give. Everything begins to be shaped out of this greater purpose for our lives, because we also have a greater perspective. And we know that when we are doing something that is fulfilling, when we are doing something that brings so much fulfillment and purpose to our lives, that it brings joy, that we will celebrate when we see things happen because of the fulfillment that we have in our life. And think about what Paul would say this, because he would say, these are light and momentary troubles. But listen, you know why he saw them as light and momentary? Because he looked with a greater purpose, and he said, these light and momentary troubles, all these things that we're going through, they are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them. See, Paul saw, man, what we're doing here, everything I'm going through, wow, it's worth it. Because he's thinking through eternity, he's thinking through heaven, he's thinking of all the faces, all the people that he's talked to, every place he's been, of the number of people that will one day be in heaven worshiping Jesus, sitting at a table, eating in one of the biggest feasts that has ever been known or thought of. As he's there, he's going to go, I saw all these people, and because of my hard work, they are here. You see, he's thinking about even the people to come way after him. As a result of his willingness to sacrifice and him seeing his life with a greater purpose, we're here today, and we're studying something that he said, and it's impacting and changing our lives. And I think about this, when we can live in light of eternity, we have a greater purpose, and this is why. Parents, it gives a little bit more weight to you to want to get home for dinner, to sit with your kids, to pray with them at night when they're going to bed, to read them a Bible story, to get them to church. Because you know what? Now you don't just go, it's all about their college and it's all about their job and it's all about who they're going to marry. It's all about, did they play this sport when they were four? Did they play the violin by the time they were five? Like, it's not about this anymore. Because what happens now for us as parents when we think in light of eternity is we go, what really matters most for my kid 100 years from now? It won't be what sport they played. It won't be what college they got into. It won't be what job they're in. It will be, where are they at with Jesus? And when I think in light of eternity, I have a greater weight and pressure that drives me towards something greater. See, that's why we give. You know, sometimes we give of our money, and like, it's like, oh, I don't want to do that. And I feel the same pressure, trust me. It's like, it's not easy. Sometimes it's hard. But listen, I know that sometimes when we give, we are not just giving, we are investing in somebody else's eternity. I think about this with my wife and I and our family. We are sponsoring a couple kids through Compassion International, which we as a church have partnerships in Ethiopia and Brazil. And so we're sponsoring a couple kids in Brazil, and recently, we got one of the letters from a girl named Bizrat. She's 13. We've been sponsoring her for several years now, and she wrote this letter recently talking about just her faith. She's just talking about how her hope in God. She's saying, I'm praying for you, and you can see the progression of her faith in these letters, and it makes you stop and go, this is why we give. This is why we sponsor her, because you know what? It's impacting not only her life today by getting education, by getting health care, by getting these things taken care of that's going to meet her needs today, but her whole eternity is being impacted as well.
See, it's why we do what we do. I think about this every time that we have a baptism at our church, which next weekend at all of our campuses, we're going to be hosting baptisms, or sorry, on August 20th, we're going to be hosting baptisms at our campus parties as well. And every time that we see somebody get baptized, every time that we see somebody come, and they come to the Connection Center, and there's tears coming down their eyes, and you just see and you hear about the impact that God's making in their life, it just makes you stop and go, this is why we do it. This is why we do it. See, it's not just for today. It's for all eternity. It's for the hope of heaven, and it gives us a greater purpose. And when we're living out a greater purpose far beyond ourselves, it helps us to experience greater levels of joy and celebration that God wants to bring in our lives today. But you know what I think the hope of heaven also brings for us is it brings a greater peace. It brings a greater peace into our life. Now, I don't know if you're paying attention. Some of you are. But football season is upon us. Yes. The universe is coming back in line. Excitement will once again fill our weekends and our talks at work. Because we'll be talking about football. Now, like him or hate him, Tom Brady is an amazing quarterback. Love him or hate him, he's great. I am not a Patriots fan, by the way, just to let you know. But Tom Brady, this is what you happen, right? You always see the Patriots get in this scenario. They're down by a touchdown. There's less than a minute. They're 80 yards out. Tom Brady comes on the field. And you ever just walk, it's like the swagger, like the calm, the Iceman just walks in, grabs the huddle in, brings everybody back in. And he's just like, this is what we're going to do. And here's the thing about it with Tom Brady, right? There's such a calmness when he gets in that scenario. And then what do? They just drive down the field. They score the touchdown. There's like 7 seconds left. And he's like, good luck, guys. And he just walks off. And then they win. Yep. But you know what happens in that huddle, though? Watch this. Tom Brady gets down. And he gets there with those players on his team. And when he starts to talk, he starts to give instructions. There's such a calmness about him because he's been there before. He knows what's going to happen. He can already see the end. He knows how this is going to play out. He's got peace about where this thing is going because he knows how it's going to end. And for us as a follower of Jesus, we can have greater peace in our life because we know how this is going to end. You know how we know it? We know it because of the promises that God's given to us. That there can be a greater peace. That's why Paul says in this passage, he says, so we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Because what is seen, like all this stuff around us, he goes, man, this is temporary. This ain't going to be here forever. But what is unseen is eternal. And Paul would go on to write throughout this letter of the hope of heaven, the things are going to be there about how we get a new body, that there's a home there for us, that there's this place that God's creating. And like, if you see the hope that he has, because he's got a greater sense of peace, that the things I'm going through today, this ain't it. This isn't where it ends. Like, I know how this ends, and my hope for heaven drives greater peace in my life. And we know, too, that when we have a greater perspective, a greater purpose, and greater peace in our life, that there's more joy that we can find ourselves in today. And I think about this a lot, though, that for us, sometimes we just have misconceptions of heaven. Sometimes, as we said earlier, we just don't think about it that often. Sometimes, if we're honest, we may even feel, now we may not say this, but we may even feel that we're losing rather than gaining when we think about heaven. And sometimes we may feel that way because we have a wrong view and understanding of heaven. I think about it a lot, like we have like the Looney Tunes heaven. You know what I'm talking about? Like when one of the cartoon characters gets killed in one of the cartoons, all of a sudden it's like poof, the white cloud appears, and then you got this like thing floating up in a white robe with a little gold halo and the harp and this like sad face, like as you float up to heaven. And that could be the furthest thing from the truth. I mean, that is stupid. You think about this, like we pictured this thing of heaven, like I'm gonna be solemn playing harp music floating on a cloud. I get to a gate and I kind of go, well, there's the gate, there's the clouds, and there's this little yellow road, and I don't really know where else this thing goes. And we think, man, it's going to be like all this music, and it's going to be sad, and it's going to be all this stuff, and things like this. I'm going to see God. Woo! Because we have such an errant perspective of heaven. You know what you read about when you see about heaven in the Bible? That, man, heaven is going to blow your mind. It is going to be amazing. That it will be one of the greatest adventures that we could ever imagine. There will be no boredom. There will be constant fulfillment. There will be celebration. There will be joy. Think about the landscape of heaven. The landscape of heaven, when God creates the new heaven, the new earth, and he puts these things there. I mean, like the landscape, the rivers, the streams, the oceans will be some of the clearest, crispest water that you can ever imagine. You have the mountains and the colors of the sky and the trees and the flowers. I mean, the colors will be so vibrant. It's like you can almost feel the color that it's so vibrant. I think about this, like when I think about heaven, is that Yosemite on its best day is like a grain of sand under a rock in a shadow behind a cave buried beneath a mountain glimpse of what heaven's going to be like. Like, we can't even begin to fathom it. I mean, in heaven, that there is a promise that that for followers of Jesus, there is a home that God is preparing, Jesus is preparing for us, that rivals anything that we could have on our earth. That there is music and celebration. I mean, for those of you who even aren't musical like myself, and you're like thinking, I only sing in the car and nowhere else, you're going to have a new voice. We're all going to be able to sing. We're all going to be able to celebrate. I mean, the worship will be, and the music will be amazing. The food that's there. Any foodies here at any of our campuses today? You know, some of you are Instagram foodies. I know, because that's all that you post is your food every day. There will be food in heaven. There will be feasting in heaven. I mean, like, this is what heaven is. And then on top of all of this, on top of all the feasting, the food, the adventure, the things that are there, there is no more struggle with sin. The addictions, the pain, the brokenness that we experience in our life is gone. Sin is erased. There are no worries, there are no fears, there are no more tears, because we are with Jesus, the one who will wipe away every single tear. I think about this too, that heaven will be the greatest reunion that you could ever imagine, where we are united with Jesus, the one that we come to come here and we sing about, we worship to, we sing these songs about, we talk about, that we'll actually be there with Jesus. That there will be a reunion of those followers of Jesus, of your family and your friends that you will see. And I just imagine in heaven that there will be some of the greatest embraces, the best conversations, the biggest smiles that'll take place. And when I think about this reunion, it kind of hits home personally for me, because I think about my brother. When I was 15 years old, my 13-year-old brother Aaron passed away. Now, Aaron was a really special kid. And I've got a picture I'll show you of Aaron so you can see him. But Aaron was born 12 weeks premature. He came in at a whopping 3 pounds, 2.5 ounces. But he was a fighter. Despite what doctors said, they said he would never make it, he would never live. He didn't even know if he'd leave the hospital. They thought maybe he would live his whole life as a vegetable. But Aaron, he'd suffered from cerebral palsy. And as a result, he was bound to a wheelchair. He would never walk. He could never talk. His eyesight was so-so. His hearing was great, though. In fact, Aaron could hear your voice when he knew you, and he could hear you. You wouldn't even be able to see, but he'd hear your voice, and you would just see the smile light up across his face. And I remember just, like, the joy that he had. He would go through things like seizures and weeks in the hospital. He would be air flighted in an ambulance, driven to Duke Medical Center from our hometown in North Carolina. I mean, like, he would spend weeks every year in the hospital. He'd have seizures, muscle spasms, and all kinds of pain that would happen. But he would find joy in all of that, in the simplest things, oftentimes even some of the things that cause us a nuisance. You know, sometimes when the birds are chirping too loud and you're like, I just wish the birds would shut up, he would just laugh and get the big smile on his face. And that rain that we often run through or try to get past, or we cover up our iPhone with, like when the rain little drops would hit his head, he would just start laughing because he loved it. The breeze would blow and it would make him smile. Like, he just found joy in all these things in his life. And one of the joys and hopes for me when I think about heaven and the peace that comes is that one day I'll be able to run with my brother for the first time. That one day we'll be able to sit down and have a conversation with words for the first time. And there were so many miracles throughout his life that took place. I mean, answers to prayer that took place time and time again. I'm going to sit down and just continue to share a list with you. But one of the amazing things was there was a mom of a kid who also had cerebral palsy that went to school with my brother, who the night that Aaron passed away, she woke up in the middle of the night and she had these words, she said, just beating in her heart from God for this poem. And I want to share this with you. It's called When He Called My Name. It says, when I went to sleep, I heard a voice call my name. Aaron Robert Hibiski, come with me. You will never be the same. I opened my eyes and saw angels all around. I smiled, laughed, and giggled, and placed my feet on the ground. I never walked before. This was so new. I walked on streets of gold, but wanted to see Jesus too. I looked up and saw Jesus, his arms open wide. Come, my child, he said, and stand by my side. Aaron, you've touched many lives while you've lived on the earth. You've been changed. You are new. Receive your new birth. New eyes I give you to see your mansion so fair. Your ears will be perfect to hear music up here. Praise is so beautiful and joy so complete. New strength in your arms, your legs, and your feet. In your new home, you will run, jump, and play, for you are here forever and ever to stay. You'll sing praises to Jesus with your new voice. Then you wait patiently till the day of rejoice. When you are united, forever you'll be with Mom, Dad, and David, a happy family. The day will be glorious when you're together again. My peace, love, and joy will keep you till then. Now take your crown, you've earned it, it's true. Enter into the home I've prepared for you. Family and friends will miss you when you are away. Together again, you will be when you can play. Jumping, running, talking, and laughing, you'll have lots of fun. Aaron Robert Hibiski, your life has just begun. You know, I think about this, that oftentimes our view of heaven, it's not where life actually begins. But the promise that God has for us is that he could say the same thing to us, that your life has just begun. See, the hope of heaven gives us peace. The hope of heaven gives us a greater perspective. The hope of heaven gives us greater purpose. That no matter where we find ourselves at today, that we can have joy and celebration. There can be a constant driver because we know that we have this eternity secured, this hope that will forever be there. That we can look forward to that day when even in our current circumstances that there can be relief. And it can bring us peace and joy today. And the way that we know that we can get to heaven is what Jesus would actually say. Jesus would be sitting with his disciples. It's often called the Last Supper because this would be the last meal that they would ever have with Jesus here on this earth before he would go to the cross. And as they were eating, Jesus took the bread, and when he had given thanks, he breaks it and he gave it to the disciples saying, take and eat. This is my body. Then he took the cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, drink from it, all of you. And he passed the cup around. And this is what he said about it. He said, this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. Now, I know for us, maybe some of you are new to church. I mean, this sounds a little crazy, a little bit weird, but let me kind of say what Jesus is saying. See, what would happen is the disciples would hear this, and maybe they wouldn't fully understand it. Like, they're like, okay, the bread breaking, it's his body breaking, the blood, the cup that we're passing, this wine that we're passing right here, like this represents his blood. And they're kind of still taking it all in. But where they would have a greater understanding of it is what would happen the next day. Because it would be the next day that Jesus would have his body broken. That he would be whipped. That he would be beaten. That he would carry a cross out of the city up to the hill where nails would be driven through his hands and his feet. And there on that cross, he would die, shedding his blood and letting his body be broken, signifying that this was a new covenant, that this blood is poured out for the forgiveness of sins. So that when we would believe in him, that when we would turn to Jesus and say, Jesus, I know that my sin, my shame, my brokenness, my past, that I can't get rid of this, I can't do this on my own, and I need you to take it, that when we would trust in him for what he's done on the cross, of what he's paid for the price for our sin, that we can experience forgiveness today, that we can experience transformation in our life starting now, that we can experience a hope for heaven and eternity that carries us forever, because our joy today stands in our hope for tomorrow, and Jesus came to bring hope so that we could experience joy and forgiveness in our lives. And so I wonder today at all of our campuses if maybe this is your opportunity just to stop. You've been trying, you've been coming to church, you've been trying to apply everything, you've been trying to do, but you haven't stopped and just said, Jesus, I'm trusting you. And maybe today that would be you. To stop, to put your faith in Jesus, to say yes to him, and then to truly begin to live for him. But you know, as the disciples watched Jesus on the cross, as they watched him go into the tomb, even before Jesus had been raised from the dead, I wonder if this last thing that Jesus said still stood out in their minds. Because right after he had passed the cup, he said this. He said, I tell you, I will not drink from this fruit of the vine from now on until the day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. And there was a promise, an anticipation that brings hope. A hope that brings joy, because he's saying there would be a day when we no longer take the bread of communion and break it and dip it in the juice or do this to remember Jesus' body, but there will be a day when we are in heaven and we sit down with Jesus and we share a meal and we look at him face to face. See, our anticipation brings hope, and our hope brings joy, and our joy today stands on our hope for tomorrow. Will you pray with me? God, today as we stop and as we think about this, I just pray that you would help us to be reminded of the hope that we can have because of what Jesus has done for us, that we would never lose a sense of awe and celebration about the hope and the glory of heaven, that one day we can know that we will forever spend eternity with you on one of the greatest adventures and celebrations that we could ever imagine. So God, I pray that you help us to have joy and celebration today, to have a perspective that is greater and purpose that is greater and peace that is greater in our lives, no matter what we face. And today as we take communion, God, would it be a reminder for us, not just of what Jesus has done on the cross, but for the hope that we have for all eternity. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. At all of our campuses, I want to invite you, as the band leads us in worship, to stand, and then to, when you're ready, to head to the tables in our auditorium to take communion, taking the bread and dipping in the juice, remembering Jesus and the hope that we have together.